Okay.
It's up to you to change his mind.
Sorry, that was a family emergency.
Oh no, what's wrong?
You know what? That's private.
Boundaries, Dwight, come on.
I'm sorry, Mr. Butler. As I was saying, we're having a limited...
Speak up a little bit louder, I'm hard of hearing.
He's hard if he's an old man.
Okay, as I was saying, right now
yeah,
we are having...
talk louder.
Okay, our prices have never been lower.
Son, you have to talk louder.
Never been lower.
Louder, son!
Butler, our prices have never been lower!
Stop it,
heat!
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Ethan Weiss and Nick here with you once again for part two of our post-mortem. Before we get into everything, you know what we got to do. We got to take care of the housekeeping. First things first, follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow the blog at GothamSN. I forgot Nick. Follow Nick at Nick Zeraris. Subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audio Boom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, rate us 5 stars, leave us a kind review. All right, let's get into it. Last week's episode ended with some fireworks and a lot of people hopping on the Twitter sphere to agree, disagree with me, with Weiss. I know Weiss wants to address some of the takes, and you know that's my fault. I had to hop off early. I was in Vegas for a work trip. I had a very early Pacific time breakfast, so we sort of got cut off there at the very end, but we're back. Just like we said, I hope I don't sound too bad. And Weiss, I'll throw it to you to take it away since we sort of left off yelling at each other about Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley contract situations.
Yeah, two separate conversations, and we can have both of them. But let's start with the quarterback, the most important position in the NFL by far. And got a lot of pushback. We had sort of like a brief back and forth on it, and a lot of people came at me thinking that I was being overly emotional, got a lot of DMs, got a lot of people saying that I was wrong. I'm not really wrong most of the time. And I went back and listened to the conversation, and I can see where people sort of misinterpreted what I was saying. So let's get into it. And if you guys could bear with me, because I did some research, I put together sort of like a
PowerPoint presentation.
Exactly what I'm trying to explain to people. And Jordan Ron out of ESPN, who does a great job covering the team.
Unlike some others,
who put out a quick 2-minute video that took partially what I was going to say, but I really want to go more into detail about it. So if you guys give me a second, and we can discuss this as well. Number one, and I want to get this out of the way now. If the Giants want to franchise tag Daniel Jones and tell him, hey, man, do it again, I'm all for it. All for it. That's what they want to do. As I've stated for... I think since the Washington game on Sunday Night Football that, hey, I think Daniel Jones has earned the right to be this team's starting quarterback in 2023. That's been my official quote-unquote statement. You guys can back me on that. I've said it. Hey, he deserves to be the quarterback in 2023. That's as far as I've gone. I've talked about three-year extension, whatever, but my official statement has always been Daniel Jones deserves to be this team starting quarterback in 2023. So, got a lot of people tweeting at me, got a lot of people coming at me talking about, you know, I'm emotional, I'm living in the moment, I'm this, I'm that. For the record, I'm not. I've been very consistent for the past 6 weeks. If anything, I think you guys, not you guys, but the people that are coming at me are living in the moment and coming off a playoff loss that sucked. I mean, it wasn't pretty. It's never pretty, but I know it hurts, and I know I think people are being a little bit over-emotional compared to where they were after the Minnesota game. So let's get into it. All right, Daniel Jones. Daniel Jones is up for a contract extension or a franchise tag. Depending on where you rank him going into next season, I think he's teetering top 10. He's certainly top 15. But he is a above-average starting quarterback in the National Football League that you can win with. They got to the divisional round with him. So let's look at some of the quarterbacks and what they're making. A lot of people say, well, they're pulling numbers out of their ass, talking about $20 million, $25 million. It's just unrealistic because you don't know the quarterback market. And I said this, that there's three things with the quarterback market that people need to understand. Number one, the team doesn't dictate the market. And some, that's across the board with all positions, but mainly the quarterback position, you don't really dictate the market. You don't. It's simple as that. You don't. The market dictates the market. some asshole could come around and offer a guy a fully guaranteed contract, and it just fucks everything up. Great example of that, Ethan, is the Baltimore Ravens.
Deshaun Watson, too.
And what the Baltimore Ravens are going through. Baltimore thought they had everything in control. All of a sudden, the market dictates the market, and look what happens, right? So, that's number one. Team doesn't dictate the market. Market dictates the market. Number two, unlike any other position in football, team success sides with the quarterback, meaning the quarterback can look at team success and use it at the negotiating table. Whether it's right or wrong, that's the way it is. I'm not saying I agree with that. I'm just saying that's how it is, okay? It's always been that way. Eli Manning won a Super Bowl. He became one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the NFL. I think we're the highest paid quarterback in the NFL at the time. I have to go back and look. My point is, you might not be the highest paid, but if the team has the highest level of success, you're probably going to get paid at the same level of quarterbacks that are probably much better than you. That's just the way it is. That's the quarterback market. What did I say was step one? The quarterback market dictates the quarterback market, not the team. Number three is obviously, this is across the board with every position. Statistically speaking, you can have a bad year as a quarterback, but if you have a great year statistically, that statistic-wise, that plays into your hands. Daniel Jones, I think a lot of people point to the 15 touchdown passes. Well, that's not high, obviously. He also did have 7 rushing touchdowns. So you're talking 22 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. I think he had the lowest interception rate amongst a starting quarterback this season. And he also had close to 4,000 total yards when you factor in his legs. And I think you have to factor in his legs, because if a guy like Jalen Hurts can or Lamar Jackson can, Daniel Jones should be allowed to too, right? All right, now, he's at the negotiating table. You got to look at what quarterbacks are making, right? And you got to look at when they got paid. So I'm in agreement, he's not going to get $50 million a year. Agent might ask for it, but he's not going to get it. Agent should ask for it, but he's not going to get it. He's not going to get the $48 million Russell Wilson guy. He's not going to get $46 that Deshaun and Kyler got, $45 that Mahomes got. Not going to get $43. He's not going to be a $40 million a year quarterback. Agent's going to ask for that, but he's not going to get it. For the record, Derek Carr is a $40 million quarterback, but Derek Carr's contract is a little bit different. But again, I'm just putting it out there. Dak Prescott's a $40 million quarterback. Matthew Stafford's a $40 million quarterback. They're going to ask for that, right? And they have the team success on their side, right? They also have the fact that he's 26 years old on his side. He's a young ascending player on his side. Now, when you look after that, you start going into the 30s. You got Kirk Cousins at 35, Jared Goff at 33, Carson Wentz at 32, Matt Ryan at 30, Tannehill's at 29.5, but we're going to round that up to 30. So you got about 5 quarterbacks that are sitting at 30, all of which signed their contract more than 2 years ago. What does that mean? That means the salary cap went up. So $30 million 3 years ago is different than $30 million today. That's sort of what Jordan Ronan said on his little YouTube video that he put out, which I think is a very good point. Now, here's where we can eliminate all that $25 and $20 million bullshit. Ryan Tannehill is the 14th highest paid quarterback in the NFL at $29.5 million. Ryan Tannehill is the 14th highest paid quarterback in the NFL at $29.5 million. Annual. I'm not talking about overall contract. I'm talking about annual career. After that, it's Tom Brady at $15 million. Which is an outlier. We agree, Tom Brady, contracts always outlier in any conversation we talk about quarterbacks. After that, guys, it's Winston, Mariota, a bunch of guys on their rookie contract, Mitchell Trubisky. Tyrod Taylor is the 25th highest paid quarterback in the NFL. Tyrod Taylor at $5.5 million is the 25th highest paid quarterback in the NFL. I just want to make people like visualize how the quarterback market is. Now, where does Daniel Jones fall into it? Well, we have to come to an agreement that he is a $30 million, at least going to get $30 million. If he gets $30 million per year, the Giants should sign on the dotted line and be happy with that. But that's not going to be the case. Why? Because the guys that are making $30 million, you can make the argument that Daniel Jones is better than them. One, two, those guys signed their contract years ago. $30 million years ago is different than $30 million today. So where is that sweet spot? I think the sweet spot's right at 35. If they can come to an agreement at $35 million per year on a 3-year deal, I'm all for it. You guarantee 2 years? That's my preference. Weiss, why is that your preference? He only had one good season. You really want to risk it? Here's why I'm in favor of that. You ready? I believe Daniel Jones is an ascending player. Dak Prescott might be a descending player for multiple reasons why people point to him and say that's a cause for concern because you pay a guy and all of a sudden he's having these years. Dak Prescott had a really serious knee injury. He might also not be might not be as good as we thought he was going to be. My point is Daniel Jones is an ascending player. If you guys were to ask me, hey, put your money on it right now, do you think Daniel Jones is a better quarterback in 2024 than 2023? My answer is yes. I think statistically speaking, he's going to be better. I think the team is going to be better talent-wise around him, and I think that's going to lead to him having better numbers. Now, team success. Do I think the team success is going to be the same? I don't know if they're going to win a playoff game. I'm going to bet money on that, but I think they're going to be a good team, a playoff team. Whether they win a playoff game, I don't know yet, but I'm saying I'm pretty confident that, hey, he's going to have a better statistical season next year. So because of that, rather than franchise tagging him going out there, and again, remember what I said earlier, team success and player success sides with the quarterback. And the quarterback market isn't dictated by the team, it's dictated by what? The market. There's two quarterbacks that are going to be making over $50 million per year coming up. Hear me out. I'm not saying Daniel Jones is in that conversation. But what I'm saying is, remember, the market is not dictated by the team.
Yes. It's dictated. Inflation. Yeah. Yes. The price goes up over time. Yeah.
With the salary cap going up. So if Daniel Jones goes out there, and let's say he's just as good as what he was in 2023 or 2022, then that it's no longer $35 million a year. Then the starting point is $40 million a year. So again, going back to what, I'm serious. Going back to what I'm saying, Daniel Jones, I think, is an ascending player. Do I think he can crack the top 10? Yes, I do think he can crack the top 10. Do I think he'll ever be a top 5 quarterback? No, I'm not going to say that. But I do think he can crack the top 10. If he cracks the top 10, given what we are seeing with the quarterback market and the salary cap going up, I believe it's best to lock him into a 3-year deal where you guarantee 2 years versus the franchise tag at $32 million guaranteed 1 year. And then you got to deal with the fact that if he goes up there and prove it, then the price might go higher, much higher than the level of play did. Does that make sense?
Yes, I get the point you're trying to
make. Listen, everyone here understands the point that you're going for.
No, they didn't. They did because you didn't.
No, I'm talking about us.
The three of us.
Okay, but listen, at the same time, okay, the beautiful thing about markets is that markets correct themselves over time, all right?
So, not the quarterback market. It's crazy and crazier.
Well, because of inflation, correct. But we see this at positions all the time. We see this in other sports at very important positions all the time. And you have to account for salary caps going up and inflation and all those factors, right? But in a vacuum, like if you're just dealing in percentages, like markets always correct themselves. So yes, if you look at the contracts that Ryan Tannehill got, how much Matthew Stafford's getting paid, some of these other guys that you had mentioned previously. Yeah, of course. Listen, Daniel Jones is going to get more than that. I don't think anyone here is arguing that he is going to get in that $35 million a year range. I would be surprised if he didn't get in that $35 million a year range, especially given what the franchise tag is for quarterbacks this upcoming season. But
$32 million.
32, correct. But at the same time, you would look at the Browns. Do you think that they regret giving Deshaun Watson that contract? They do. Look at the Broncos. Do you think that they regret giving Russell Wilson that contract? They do. The Raiders regretted Derek Carr's contract after a year. Aaron Rodgers.
That contract was set up where they could get out of it after 1 year.
Correct, but now they're still like, if Derek Carr is making $30 million a year, there's probably a chance that he's still a Raider and they're going to try to retool and figure it out. Not anymore, because that contract is just an abomination. But they got out of it. So listen.
Derek Carr has been the Raider quarterback for 12 years. They have one playoff win.
Okay.
Or no playoff wins, I'm sorry.
Who are the next young quarterbacks that are going to be getting monster contracts?
Justin Herbert. And Joe Burrow.
Okay, so Joe Burrow has been to a Super Bowl, and we're probably, and again, we still have to go over your complete disrespect of the Bengals. We'll do that later in the episode. Joe Burrow has already been to one Super Bowl. He is probably going to go to a second Super Bowl, in my opinion. Listen, keep doubting.
He'll go to a second Super Bowl. I don't know if it's going to be this year.
Justin Herbert, not nearly in the same situation, but is going to be due a big contract. What do we think that Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert are going to be making? Probably
55 per year.
45 to 50. Because it depends on the number of years. Because if you do 10 years, it'll be 45-ish like Mahomes. If you do something more short-term, it'll be a higher number. I imagine those teams will do long-term deals to maintain flexibility the way the Chiefs have with Mahomes, where they can constantly keep restructuring it and banking more money in the given season and pushing money into future years. It depends how many years.
Joe Burrow, the floor is $50 million a year. Let's just get that.
The Bengals do not. Mike Brown might not. Paul Brown might not have $50 million in the bank to pay Joe Burrow. So you might have to.
In order to make that money, you got to have Joe Burrow. He's
of course
one of the faces of the NFL.
I disagree with you. I'm saying the Bengals are cheap.
Go ahead, Ethan. So $50 million. Let's say they get $50 million. Keep going. What you're going to say?
Okay. And Herbert, what do we think Herbert's going
to? Let's say they're both around 45 to 55 million. Let's call it $50 million as a sweet spot.
Sure. Let's focus on Joe Burrow, right?
Okay.
2021, he threw for over 4,600 yards, 34 touchdowns. Yeah, he threw for 4,500 yards and 35 touchdowns this year. He's been to two Super Bowls.
Absolutely.
So if you franchise tag Daniel Jones this year and you pay him that $32 million, we're not expecting some massive jump. Let's say he improves a little bit. And then we look at what other young quarterbacks are getting with Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert. They're probably getting between 45 and 50. I don't think anyone's going over 50, especially with what Nick said with the years on the contract, because these guys are undoubtedly franchise quarterbacks, right? Okay.
Wait till that notification comes in that these are $50 million a year quarterbacks.
Listen,
send it to our group chat. Can't wait.
Okay, fine. I will gladly admit that I'm wrong, just like you will gladly admit that you were wrong about the Bengals against the Bills. So, point being, how much more do you expect Daniel Jones to improve, both statistically as well as, I mean, what's the word I'm looking for? Quantitatively versus qualitatively, from going from 32 million to leapfrogging over 40. I don't see that happening. If you give him 35 million a year for 3 years, like you're suggesting, right? Or let's just say, for argument's sake, the franchise tag is 35 million. We know it's not, it's 32 million, but I'm just using that 35 as the baseline.
Right.
He is not surpassing 40. No, I think the 40 is probably the ceiling.
Wait, do you know that Dak Prescott is making $40 million a year? You don't think that if a 27-year-old Daniel Jones, who's asked to bet on himself again, goes out, has a much better statistical season, the team has similar team success, that he's not going to get $40 million a year?
The one point I want to make about that is the Giants were fortunate this year. They won a lot of one-score games, and that does not translate well year to year, especially relying on the way they had to win. They had to bank on turnovers and stuff.
Absolutely.
So team success is definitely part of this conversation.
Right.
The only way I could see him clearing 40 is if they made like the NFC title game next year. That's really the only way I could see him making a leap from the franchise tag of 32 up to 40 is if they made an NFC
franchise tag is 30. Let's call it $32 million a year.
Yeah.
When you franchise tag a player, that becomes the floor of a negotiation.
Yes, correct.
Unless he has a miserable season.
Right. So he signs a franchise tag. No long-term agreement is made. He plays 2023 on the franchise tag. He has a much better statistical season. Let's say he throws for 4,000 yards.
I still don't think they're going to get there, though. That's the thing. They need a lot of stuff on this roster for him to get to.
A second franchise tag is going to cost them $38 million right at 40.
Yeah. You keep kicking the can down the road until you definitely know.
What I think the issue is with that is it's an easy out, right? If he falls flat on his face, which I think is a realistic possibility too, that this season is just a mirage of Daniel Jones' career. I don't think you could rule that out. I don't necessarily think it will be, but you cannot rule it out. But if he plays well again, he knows going into the next offseason, hey, the tag is at least $38 million.
Yeah, and I'm fine with that.
The floor becomes 40. That's what I'm trying.
I'm fine with that. I'm okay with that, because if he plays to that level, that tells you that there's still something to get out of it.
Again, you guys go back to playing to that level. What I'm trying to explain to you guys is he does.
Because if he stinks, they can walk away. They don't have to tag him a second time. Okay, that's the point. I want to see him do it again. If he does it again, he'd be worth $38 million, $40 million. That's my point. That's...
I agree. I get that franchise type thing. Here's why I'm more in favor of the three-year deal, right? Is because I don't have to worry about marginal improvement. Because understand, marginal improvement with Daniel Jones's game on a franchise tag widens the gap more of what he's going to make next year. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely.
Like, even marginal improvements could lead to a much different price tag next year. That's just the way the quarterback market is, especially if you make a guy.
And my point last week, my point a few days ago is still my point now. Like, I will gladly pay the premium. If I know for certain that he is that guy.
But here's the thing. You might not know for certain. He might just make marginal improvements, but that price tag will go up.
He's making marginal improvements in his age 26 season, 26, 27. At what point do you acknowledge that that's the ceiling? In which case, the franchise tag was the correct move.
And you heard Shane say it himself during his press conference. There's a walk-away point in every negotiation, no matter how much you like somebody.
Which we reached with Saquon, which I do want to discuss once we're done with the Daniel Jones situation.
Here's my thing. I want Daniel Jones as the starting quarterback in 2023.
Me too.
I think it would be wiser, because I think he is an ascending player, that it is a three-year extension with an out after two.
Yeah.
That's what I want. If it's the franchise tag, it's fine. I just think it's a little bit more of a risk with the franchise tag. Obviously, there's the out after 1 year, but there's also that risk that he plays just as well or just slightly better, and then that price tag goes up exponentially based on team success, quarterback market, and individual success.
Again, we will find out what Joe Shane's risk tolerance is.
It sounds like a guy that's going to sign him to a long-term deal.
Never know.
Yeah.
Again, whatever Shane decides, I'm gonna be fine with.
But I wanted to clear that up in a nice conversation that I just think people took it the wrong way. All right.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to Saquon. Now, do you see what I'm fucking saying about this guy posturing in his press conference?
Let's talk about Saquon Barkley.
We're talking about Saquon Barkley. You see what I'm saying?
No, because the report is he still wants $14 million a year, $15 million a year.
No, the report is that he wants 16 and he turned down 12 from the Giants.
I think there's
a would take a I would take a discount. Sir, the discount was $12 million. You declined that. So you're a lying piece of shit.
Well, he didn't say I'll take a discount. He said I'm not trying to reset the market.
Reset the market, okay? With the injury history that he has and how devalued the position has become over the years, Alvin Kamara is not making that much.
Alvin Kamara is at 14, I think, yeah.
So, he's not trying to reset the market? Bozo, take 12. Let's go. You want to be a Giant? You want to be the only marketable player on this offense? You want to stay in the New York market?
I want to say something about Saquon Barkley.
Go ahead.
I think I'll give it to you. So, I've had time to sleep on it. I was a little emotional after the Eagle game. I was like, man, let's run this back. Man, we can improve a little bit. We got Barkley. You know, we can beat these guys. I was a little emotional. Guys, I'm 50-50 with Barkley. And I have a hard stop at 12 million. And my preference is just franchise tag him and ride it out for 10.
Yep.
Look, regardless how you feel about Saquon Barkley, I know how you two feel on it, but the listeners, we have people that are very much Saquon, that's my guy, facing the franchise, great player, you know.
We also have the opposite.
We also have the opposite too, yeah. The conversation about the running back and how it is a devalued position has to be had. You cannot just ignore that. You can't just say Saquon's an outlier. No, he's not. We've already seen the injuries. And I think, first of all, 14, 15, 16, it's not happening. So let's just...
No, not with this roster construction. No. And let me say this. The counter argument for the you got to let Saquon walk crowd has been, He's the only talented piece of your offense. He's your most talented offensive player.
That's what I've been saying.
That says more about the composition of the team than it says about Saquon. If the running back is your most talented player on your offense, look around the league, right? There are tight ends who dominate these offenses. Travis Kelce, prime Gronk. I mean, hell, Dallas Goedert is better than the running backs on the Eagles roster. You got George Kittle, who's not better than Christian McCaffrey, but he is the outlier, right? You look at the wide receivers around the league. You look at the quarterbacks around the league. Like, these are the positions that need to be the most talented positions on your offense. Your offense is not going to thrive or succeed unless you have an insane coach, right? Like we see with Shanahan. If the running back is your most talented position, you need the quarterback to be more talented. You need the wide receivers to be more talented. In some instances, you need the tight ends to be more talented. It is more of an indictment of how barren this roster is of talent that we're starting Daniel Bellinger, Richie James, and Darius Slayton. So that's why we need Saquon, because, oh, if Saquon's not here, what happens? That's a roster composition issue, guys. That is not a Saquon issue. That is, we need to go out there and get a wide receiver one. We need to go out there and draft someone. That is not an indictment on how good Saquon is. It's an indictment of how bad the roster is.
And to your point about the roster, if you're going to commit to Saquon, that means you're going to commit to running the ball, which means you need to redesign this roster a little bit. You need to improve the interior of the offensive line. The reason Christian McCaffrey is killing it is, aside from being talented, the 49ers have the best left tackle in football in Trent Williams. They have the best play caller in all of football in Shanahan, scheming up an offense where you have Debo, Kittle, McCaffrey, Ayuk all on the field at one time, where they can run and pass out of any formation. The Giants, we don't know what type of offense that Dable and Kafka would like to run if they had their choice. They ran the ball because Saquon was their best player this year. In another season or two, they might have the personnel to open it up a little bit more and have a nice 11 personnel grouping that they really like and throw the ball 35, 40 times a game. If you're committing $12, $13 million to a running back, that means you're going to have to commit resources to making your running back better, because as we know, running backs are products of their environment. You can be really good, like Najee Harris is, but behind a bad offensive line, you're going to have a really hard time being effective. The Giants are going to need to commit more resources to running the ball well, and that's on top of giving Saquon an extension. There's a real argument they need to replace all three interior offensive line positions.
And I think another thing is, they have two players that are reset the market players that are coming up for contract extension.
Andrew Thomas.
And Dexter
Lawrence. And Dexter Lawrence.
Those are reset the market guys.
Yep.
Like, they're next in line. Who's making top dollar? I'm two, three.
Yeah.
Above him. So that's also the case too. But with Barkley, look, the thing is, when you don't have skill players, like, it's not the fact that he's the best skill player. It's the fact that he's the only skill player that's worth talking about. Like, the other ones are not, you don't need to scheme for those guys. Like, they don't have another person on their roster where you're like, where the opposing defenses are sitting in meeting rooms saying, hey, you see this number 86 or number 18 or number,
yeah. But I think we're at the point, especially this season, like, I'm sorry, but the only reason teams would be game planning and scheming for Saquon Barkley is because there's no one else. Like, they earlier in the season, like, part of the reason that Daniel Jones doesn't have like those crazy statistical numbers is because they really early in the season combine a new scheme, new coaching staff, some new pieces on the offensive line, along with the fact that they had no good receivers. Like, yeah, they're just going to run the ball because they had Saquon Barkley. I mean,
carry the load for 9 weeks.
Sure he did.
Yeah, but they're in that lull when they lost 4 out of 6, 5 out of 6, and had a tie in there. He was pretty ineffective. I mean,
well, I truly believe their offense got better when they decided, hey, we're not going to run through Saquon. We're going to play through the quarterback.
Run the quarterback, yeah.
Yeah.
I think a lot of that was they got more stability at their receiver position. Like, there wasn't guys going in and out. Like, you know, like David Sills early on, and then Sterling Shepard got hurt. Like, I think they got consistent at their receiver spot. But I just think with Barkley, man, I see both sides to it. He's a great player. They don't really have a lot of great players. But at the same time, it's a devalued position, man. You can't ignore that. Like, you just can't say, he's great. We have to keep him. You know, there's a whole nother element here. And I truly believe that after watching Joe Shane's presser, there's like a hard deadline, like a hard run.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're not crossing that line. And it feels like ownership is sort of on the general manager on the front office's side, where it's like, this is it. Like, we're not going over this, you know? And either you take it, or if we have the franchise tag at our disposal because we don't have to use it on the quarterback, like, we're going to tag you. Like, it's just simple as that. And then there's people talk about the transition tag and all that. Transition tag is basically, hey, it just allows the Giants to match whatever offer he gets. So it doesn't do anything for the Giants. So with Barkley, it's I think it's tougher for me than for you guys. I understand what you guys are coming from. But, man, it's just the running back position. You know, it's
look at Zeke.
Yeah.
Look at Zeke and the Cowboys right now. I mean, you think
$18 million cap hit for a short yardage back.
Yeah.
That's a tough pill to swallow, man.
Market correction. No running back is going to get a contract like that for a very long time.
And the other part of this that the Giants will have to worry about going forward is we are in entirely new uncharted waters when it comes to the wide receiver position and the marketplace. Tyreek and Devontae entirely reset that.
Yes.
The Titans they traded A.J. Brown purely because they did not want to pay him that extension. The Giants eventually will need to commit massive resources to at least one, if not two, quality wide receivers. That needs to be part of the long-term financial planning of the team.
True.
Well, that's the
great
people
point.
People keep throwing out these receivers that the Giants should trade for. Well, they're either A.
I don't think there's any that they should trade for.
I know, but I'm saying they're throwing this out.
Yeah.
It's like, keep in mind, A.
How are you going to fit that?
Either they have big-time cap hits and a big contract, or B, they're in line for one. So it's like, it's not like you're getting a guy that's going to be, you know, on a rookie contract for 2 years that can, you know, produce for you.
Right.
You're training for whoever you're training for. They're going to either garner big money or have big money that you got to fend under your cap. So.
And the Giants have big decisions to make as far as structuring their roster, because they got to figure out what they're going to do with Leonard Williams, because there's no way he's playing for $32 million next year. They'll either extend him and cut and bring that number down, or they'll cut him outright and swallow the pill, the bad, bitter pill again, like they had to do last offseason. They're going to cut Galladay. That'll save them about $7 million, $10 million in dead cap. They have a lot of that. They got to figure out if they're going to keep Adoree at 19 or if they're going to extend him to try and bring that number down. There's a lot of decisions they have to make, and it's not just in a vacuum, like they can give Daniel Jones this much. Well, if they give Daniel Jones this much, how much can they give Saquon? What can they do with Leo? What are we going to do with Dexter and Andrew Thomas? There are so many decisions, and it's hard because we spent the first 20 minutes talking about Daniel Jones, and like that is the most important decision because that's the most cap space you're going to have to commit to somebody. But that's not in a vacuum. You've got to keep in mind these seven other guys, and they still have to fill out the bottom half of the roster and sign their draft class.
You know what I just realized? Someone tell me if this is totally wrong. If they franchise tag Daniel Jones, will Daniel Jones and Leonard Williams have the same cap hit next year?
About, yeah.
Okay.
So you have two guys taking up 65
million.
Yeah.
There's no way they can keep Leo at that hit.
No way.
No, especially with Dexter in line. And Dexter's in the final year of his deal, actually. Like, this is going to be the final year of his
contract. Yeah, there we go with Leonard Williams, the fucking press conference posturing. Oh, I would take less. Yeah, you would take less. You've been in fucking New York your entire life. You don't want
to. He's a good player. He's a good player.
He's a really good player. He's not anywhere near his cap yet.
No.
Him and Dexter Lawrence are one of the best.
Dexter Lawrence is the best.
Leonard's pretty good
too. This is like the Alden Smith, Justin Smith conversation from 10 years ago. Like, yeah, Alden Smith was very good, but Justin Smith never got his flowers.
Leo's good, man.
Leo's a solid player, but he's not worth $23
million. Nah, he's more than solid. I give you the $32 million. He's not a $32 million player, cap hit player, but.
Yeah, Aaron Donald was a $32 million cap hit player.
Yeah.
Leonard Williams is a good player. He's a really, really good player.
Making more than Tom Brady.
Here we go. It's Tom Brady shit. All right. Let's talk. We can touch on some. Julian Love.
If they can find a number they like for him, I'm fine with bringing back. They need depth. They don't have bodies, and they know him. They like him. He's been here a long time.
Yeah, find him back. But I don't understand the love for love. Like, it's literally because there's no one else. and because right. he's and because he's a good leader. Like, okay, fine.
But the thing is, you got Xavier McKinney waiting in the wings too. They're gonna have to figure something out with him too, because he's gonna be entering. I think he's entering year three of his.
Yeah, stay off an ATV for a full season, and then we'll talk.
I actually saw pictures of his hand.
Yeah,
did not look good.
I'm sure. We were talking about a JPP situation.
It looked sort of like that, except yeah. he had the fingers. If he lost the fingers. Anyways, their offensive line, Evan Neal, are you guys worried about Evan Neal next year?
Of course. I mean, but again, it's like, well, here we are talking about correcting markets, correcting overreactions, where you and I both were guilty of overreacting to Andrew Thomas's early
not studies. Me. Do not you put are. Me in that. Yeah. No.
Yes.
The only time I was...
We'll go back to the podcast and we'll pull the clips.
Only time I was worried about Andrew Thomas was that preseason game against New England, where I was like, this guy, and I remember exactly what I said. I said, this guy looked worse in that preseason game than he did all of his rookie year where he struggled. That's all I said.
We'll pull
the Never... Nick, you got the episodes, I'm sure, on your computer. You can look them up. You can play them. I was never used the B word with Andrew Thomas.
Okay. Never. So, again, you have to be nervous.
Nervous, yes.
About Evan Neal.
But they're not worried. They're to Mike Francesa. I'm not worried, but I'm nervous.
But I'm worried. I'm very worried.
And I promise I'm not going to overreact to training camp stuff that comes out or preseason snaps where people overreact. I think they got to shore up the interior of their offensive line.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say this, and I want people to preface, wide receiver is a big need, but the interior of the offensive line needs to get shored up.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, right tackle will look a lot better if you're interior.
Good right guard. Yeah.
So...
That was part of the reason for Andrew Thomas' struggles early on. He played next to like six different left guards his rookie season, I think. Yeah.
So, that's that. All right, Ethan, you wanted to talk about...
The Bengals?
Your Cincinnati Bengals.
My Cincinnati Bengals. Yeah. Very good football team. I don't understand why... I mean, from a Vegas perspective, they were like 5.5, 6-point underdogs against the Bills. And it was almost like everyone who watched the first few series of the DeMar Hamlin game had, you know, cataracts. I do not understand where this sort of perception came from. The Bengals have been a good team all season. Shout out to, I can't even pronounce his last name, Lou Anarumo, who was the former Giants defensive backs coach. He's doing an absolutely outstanding job with that defense. Joe Burrow, Joe Scheisty, is one of the best quarterbacks in the entire league. They have T. Higgins. They have Jamar Chase. Hayden Hurst is a really good tight end. I did not understand the disrespect. Had DeMar Hamlin not died on the field, I think the Bengals win that game by 2 touchdowns. I mean, they came out hot. And on top of that,
I'll let you continue, but depending on who you ask, there are some people that think DeMar Hamlin did die on the
field. Yes, did die. Well, he did die. No, technically he did die on the field. They resuscitated him, but there are some people who would think he's actually dead. Who's still
all right? No Alex Jones talking points, but no Alex Jones talking.
I'm just saying, just kind of.
There are people out there. Yeah, it's wild. But anyway, if DeMar Hamlin did not die and get resuscitated, the Bengals win that game by 2 touchdowns. They are the more talented football team. cannot say for certain whether they're the better coached football team. At least on the defensive side of the ball, they are. I am. Still not a Zach Taylor fan, but he's done a great job this year. And the Bills just hadn't been good for over a month. Josh Allen had struggled. It's clear that they're missing Brian Daboll. And listen, man, I think the Bengals are winning it all. I really do. Either them or the 49ers. Those are my two picks. They're good, man. I really hope Joe Burrow can get it done. He's one of my favorite players.
Speaking to your point, how did they go from 5.5-point road dogs to 1.5-point road favorites in a week against Kansas City? I do not understand.
Maybe the line underreacted to Mahomes' high ankle sprain.
Maybe.
The only thing that I can think of.
Yeah.
I'm so disappointed in the Buffalo Bills. So they are
talk about guys who look, you know, a little bit out of their depth. Sean McDermott. Yikes, that presser was not great.
That Brandon Breen's presser was not great either.
No.
Even though I think he was taken a little out of context. Not a good thing to say, buddy, especially coming from the guy who traded the pick that was Justin Jefferson.
Yeah.
I think my Buffalo Bills, because I did have a future on them. That was actually one of the first bets I put down when gambling became legal in my state. Completely disappointed in the Buffalo Bills. To say they don't miss Brian Daboll, and I'm not just trying to be a homer. Their offense is just boom or bust. That's basically what it was. It was a Josh Allen's going to throw 60 yards to Stephon Diggs, or it's going to be a 3-and-out. They didn't have a running game.
Can I bolster your point real quick? Because we there was a lot of preseason love, especially in the fantasy community, for noted bozo Gabe Davis.
Yeah, I drafted him.
Listen, Gabe Davis is not that good of a player. Gabe Davis was having success because of Brian Daboll. And look at the no-names that were having success in the offense for the Giants this year because of Brian Daboll.
Isaiah Hodgins,
former Buffalo Bill. How you doing? Richie James, how you doing? Brian Daboll.
I took the Bengals for granted. One of the things that was really, really just made me sick was the fact that the Bengals offensive line, which had a guy named Jackson Carmen.
Yeah, they had like third starting against the Bills.
Dominated the line of scrimmage. That was bad. That was really, really bad.
They have no pass rush. With Vaughn hurt.
They're not really built.
It's a bunch of mid.
No. Yeah, they're not built like a Buffalo Bill, like a Buffalo football team. Can't run the ball. Can't do these methodical drives, like, you know, 15 play drives when they wear you out defensively. Complete disappointment. Just so disappointed in the Buffalo Bills. But the Josh Allen slander is getting out of control.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
The quarterback discourse is disgusting. The people running to say Burrow is better than Mahomes. I love Joe Burrow. Let's relax.
Yeah, like, the crazy thing is, like, the being the second best at your position is still pretty good. You know what I'm saying? There's nothing wrong with that, right?
Yeah.
But the Kansas City Chiefs are winning the AFC. There's one blimp on Patrick Mahomes' resume, which I don't even think is a blimp because I think Joe Burrow is great, is the fact that he's 0-3 against Joe Burrow. And the Chiefs, to me...
You know why?
Because of the defense. The Bengals didn't concede a point in either of the second halves of their games last year.
You know why? It's because, hands down, Joe Burrow is the swaggiest quarterback in the NFL.
He's the white boy of the month.
No, listen.
You can't call the white boy of the month the swaggiest quarterback in the NFL.
He is the swaggiest quarterback. That man plays with so much confidence and so much swag. And, bro, the way he dresses before, the confidence that just emanates out of him cannot be discounted. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I agree with that. I definitely agree. It's the
call of that.
It's physical too.
No, he's not walking in looking like he's going to work at Goldman Sachs.
Yeah. Great.
No, Burrow's tools are good to slightly above average. What makes Burrow great is
I mean, and you know what takes him over the top? The swag.
His IQ. He's the smartest quarterback. He's the best out of all the young guys pre-snap. He is the best at identifying where the ball needs to go. It's why the Bengals run so much empty, because he can read the defense.
And the swag.
So you guys put a lot of emphasis into football IQ, right?
Yeah.
I'm just going to keep that in mind when we talk about Daniel Jones next year. Just saying.
Let's see Daniel Jones pull up wearing a SpongeBob t-shirt and talking about Star Wars like Joe Burrow. Yeah. And then we get talk.
I like the suit and tie quarterback. I'm sorry.
Boring.
All right, Lamarillo.
I was saying, but I think Patrick Mahomes knows, hey, I can't be 0-4 against this guy. This guy can't.
Yeah, now Patrick Mahomes has his half an ankle.
That's also a real consideration.
I think
Bengals pass rush is pretty good.
The Chief defense, I think, is going to be a real difference maker. They got a good pass rush, man.
They do.
Jones, I think that's going
to.
I don't.
But
think
again,
this is...
we have to ask this question every week.
Which Spags is coming?
Which Spags is coming?
I think the one that you saw last week against Jacksonville, which was pretty good, I think that defense is coming in. One of the reasons why I was out on Cincinnati is because their offensive line is banged up. It's still going to be banged up, and I think the Chiefs are better suited to take advantage of that than the Buffalo Bills were, those softies in Buffalo. And I don't think Patrick Mahomes is going to lose a second straight AFC Championship game at home. Remember, Mahomes is still on the hook for that Super Bowl, which he shouldn't be, but that loss, I think the Chiefs are destined. I think this is an MVP season for Patrick Mahomes. I think they're going to win this AFC Championship game. They're going to go to the play. They're going to go to the Super Bowl, and they got a good offensive line too, by the way, in Kansas City. And I think they're going to win the Super Bowl, and I think this is going to cement Patrick Mahomes, in my opinion, rather than these stupid questions that keep coming up about him not being the best quarterback in the NFL. He is by far. Man.
But in a few weeks' time, we are going to have some new pictures of Joe Burrow smoking cigars.
We won't, but okay. Hey, let's talk about the NFC.
Said that last week, and here we are.
I know I did.
I hope San Francisco kills them. I hope San Francisco wins for 400 yards.
Philadelphia is going to win this game.
Wrong again.
Ethan, we watched. It was a 9-9 game entering the fourth quarter. Okay? Dak Prescott threw that game away. Okay? Brock Purdy, hey, I gave a lot of credit to Brock Purdy. Brock Purdy is not just a blimp. Brock Purdy is a starting quarterback. Okay? I love the fact that he has good pocket awareness. I don't want to hear about these. He should throw these many picks. It's not happening. He doesn't throw picks. There was one play, Trayvon Diggs. By the way, the Cowboys, they've been getting opportunistic turnovers all season long. There was the play, tip pass, right into Trayvon Diggs' hands. Everyone keeps pointing to that. The ball was tipped at the line of scrimmage. That's not on Brock Purdy. I think Purdy is legit. I think he should be the starting quarterback of the 49ers next year.
And you know what Brock Purdy is currently on pace for? To go undefeated his entire career.
Yes. Talk about Tom Brady and Joe Burrow.
Yeah.
You got another Tom Brady comp in Brock Purdy.
Put him in the convo. But seriously, the 49ers should steamroll the Eagles as long as Kyle Shanahan gets out of his own way. The only reason that game against the Cowboys was close is because Kyle Shanahan, like he does every time he gets into the playoffs, big brains himself and gets away They were averaging like 7 yards a carry in the third quarter.
They stopped the run in the first half and in the third quarter.
Okay.
It wasn't until the fourth quarter. We were texting back and forth. What did the 49ers do?
Literally texting in the third quarter. Why is Kyle Shanahan not just running the ball up the gut? He started to do it, and it started to work. First of all, we're talking about a Cowboys defense that, on the interior, especially with their linebackers, is superior to the Eagles. The Eagles haven't been able to stop the run all season.
Oh, did you just say the Cowboys interior is superior?
Yes.
To the Eagles?
Yes. Pass rush?
I don't know about that. I'm going to have to disagree with you on that. They averaged 3.5 yards per attempt, did the San Francisco 49ers, against the Dallas Cowboys. And that's with them running down their throat in the fourth quarter. Don't tell me Philadelphia's defensive line and that defense can't mimic what the Dallas Cowboys did, because they can. They have a very good defensive coordinator in Jonathan Gannon. And here's the thing offensively. I don't think Jalen Hurts is going to turn the ball over the way Dak Prescott did.
Eagles giving up 4.6 yards per carry this season, which puts them 24th versus the Cowboys, who are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 spots higher.
The Cowboys
are better at stopping the run. That's been the Eagles. We spoke about this going into the playoffs, not just against the quarterback, but against running backs. The Eagles have not been good against the run. Shanahan's going to exploit that.
The team that can run the football the best is going to win this game.
I agree, and that team is going to be the 49ers.
And I don't think that team is going to be the 49ers. And I don't think Jalen Hurts is going to give him two turnovers. Nick, what do you think?
I want San Francisco to win this game badly. I am a Kyle guy. I trust Kyle a little
too.
More. Yeah, I like the 49ers in this game. I think
I don't. I know. These motherfucking Eagles, man. I just think they're built. And what makes it worse is that they have a top 10 pick. That's what makes all this worse. It's that they could lose, right? But you're like, oh, here are the Eagles. What are they going to do now? Oh, here's a top 10 pick. Like,
oh, this is not funny. Don't hate Howie because he's smart. Hate him because he's an Eagle.
I got the Eagles and the Chiefs in the Super Bowl.
Andy Reid, exact opposite.
I would like Cincinnati, San Francisco. That would be
me too.
Then I could root for either team, and I wouldn't care. I just want to be good.
I don't want the Eagles to win this game. I will actively root against them. I got tweets in the drafts. Like I'm ready. But they're just really good, man. We had all that talked about Devontae Smith and A.J. Brown and Dallas Goedert and my guy Boston Scott. Like, it's they got weapons, man. And Jalen Hurts' legs can also be a problem.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Wanted to talk about this because it came out this morning. Coach of the Year, Ethan's boy Nick Sirianni, did not make the cut. Sorry.
Was that true or that were at that? I thought that was just like some bullshit propaganda.
I thought that was the football writers one, not the NFL one.
Yeah, the NFL one is still five.
The AP Coach of the Year has three finalists. The AP one is the one that gets announced on the day before the Super Bowl, right? Nick Sirianni, not on there. Shouldn't ever have been on there.
That's just wrong.
Coach of the Year is the one that does the best job. Not the job that you're expected to do, Nick Sirianni.
I don't think there's a single team in the NFL that was expected to win 14 games.
Well, they were expected to be the number one seed in the NFC, and they were that.
They were better than the number one seed. Their win total was, what, 10? 9.5? 10?
There's nobody that's done a better job than Brian Daboll. People want to talk about Doug Peterson. Doug Peterson had, what, $90 million in salary cap space? What did Brian Daboll have a big fuck you.
Kenny Golladay.
From Dave Gettleman, a year ago, what were we saying about Daniel Jones? What are we saying a year later? He's going to be a $35 million per year quarterback. Trevor Lawrence was always going to be good. I don't understand why Ethan thought that he wasn't going to be good because Urban Meyer was his coach for 1 year, Ethan. So, look.
It's not that good.
I mean, come on, man.
The real conversation that we need to be having is comeback player of the year, because that list is a fucking joke.
Yes. But by rule, people are getting mad about the Geno Smith thing. By rule, like if you Google what's the criteria of comeback player of the year, which I did, performance is part of it. Like if you were a bad player and then you... The problem is they need to have a most improved player too.
Yeah.
That way a guy like Geno can get his flowers, because nobody improved more, I think, than Geno Smith, right? Like,
yeah. It should be like Brian Robinson. That would be my pick.
Brandon Graham.
Yeah, or Brandon Graham, yeah.
Nick Gates.
Yeah.
Nick Gates. Yeah.
Comeback player is supposed to be a great story, a guy coming back from injury, you know.
Nick Gates shouldn't be walking right now.
Yeah. Saquon tore his ACL 2 years ago. If he did what he did.
He played 14 games last year. What are we doing?
If he did what he did this year coming off of ACL.
Then sure.
Yeah, but... I don't know, but MVP, I just thought Nick Bosa deserved to get in there.
I agree.
Yeah, come on. You got to give a defense player love, and Nick Bosa's been tremendous.
How many sacks did he have, 20?
20.
Crazy.
20. Wanted to go ahead, do a quick hitter with you guys before we go, before we wrap up here. MVP of the New York Giants 2022-2023 season is...
Brian Daboll.
Player.
I would say Dexter.
Yeah, I have to say Dexter.
Excellent. Okay. Offensive player of the year for the New York Giants.
Daniel Jones. Mr.
Andrew Thomas.
I'm going to go Andrew Thomas, too. Defensive player of the year, I'm assuming Dexter
Lawrence.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Honorable mention for Adoree. If Adoree played the full season, you could add an argument for Adoree second, but When he played, he was very important. Graham Biddle, of course, Justin's in the year.
And assistant coach of the year.
Assistant coach of the year.
Yeah.
Mike Kafka.
Yeah, I think you got to say Kafka.
Overrated player of the year.
Isaiah Hodgins.
What?
Well,
how many teams is Isaiah Hodgins starting on if the Giants don't have a bunch of steakhouse
values?
He is overrated. People are going talking about, oh, he's going to be the wide receiver two next year. In no world should Isaiah Hodgins be wide receiver two on any team that's competing for a playoff spot.
Nick, do you hear this guy? Isaiah Hodgins was... He can't go wide.
Isaiah Hodgins should be a wide receiver three rotational receiver.
No.
Yes.
I think he has a little more upside than that, but I think he's probably a three on a good team. On a good team, he's a three.
Most overrated player?
John Feliciano, bro. Terrible signing.
Do people overrate him?
I think
most people just agree that he stinks.
He was a Pro Bowl alternate. Like, why?
Well, that was confusing. Yeah, but I think everyone was very confused by that.
Yeah. Nah, because I don't want to shit on Saquon. He was good this year. Daniel Jones was fine. None of the receivers are worthy of hire. I mean, what, Kenny Galladay? Everyone knows he sucks.
Julian Love, I think, was being a little overrated this year. A lot of time, I'm assuming.
I agree.
Make business decisions. Most underrated, underrated player on the Giants. Was there an underrated player? I think there's one.
Yeah, Graham Gano.
Damn it.
Best kicker in Giants history. What did he hit? He had over 90% clip this year. Over 85% from 50 plus.
I'm going to go Rich James.
Sure, good pick.
His name was like the...
No. Talk about comeback player of the year, Richie James. Came back mid-season.
Yeah, from that Seattle game, right?
Yeah.
I think Richie James was being underrated as a receiver for the Giants. Good player. Not a good player, but slot receiver.
A useful player.
Yeah. Stepped in well. Did a good job.
Yeah.
Most improved. One more. Most improved.
Most
improved. There's only one right answer here.
Oh, man, I mean, you say that, but Dex is improved.
That's the right answer. Yes.
Yeah.
Stick your chest out, man.
Oh, because I thought you were going to agree with Nick when he said Dan Jones.
Oh,
because Little Jones did improve a lot, but Dexter Lawrence,
Lawrence went from good to like elite
pro. Yeah, and all pro.
Yeah.
He skipped grade. He went from good to elite. No doubt in my mind, Dexter Lawrence. All right. I think we put a bow on the 2022 season right there, right?
We did, but the fun is not over. We still have conference championships, Super Bowl, free agency, NFL draft.
Here's the thing. The New York rebuilding Giants went as far as the Dallas Cowboys did.
Yeah. Yeah.
They can't take that away from us. This was the year for the Cowboys.
You know what I think? I think they should extend Mike McCarthy.
I agree.
Real quick for Dallas, and I've just spoken to a couple of my friends that are the Cowboy fans. Don't you guys think Jerry Jones is too much involved? Not just in terms of
obviously.
No. I'm not talking about just like in terms of like personnel decisions and all that, right? I'm talking like he adds unnecessary pressure to that team.
All the time. He has been for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Dude, that Twitter account after the game was like, holy shit.
I don't even care about that. I'm talking about like there's no reason for him and his son to be constantly doing weekly radio shows.
I agree.
Or post-game press conferences. He does a post-game press conference every single time.
Correct.
And every single time he has a microphone in his face, he'll say something stupid. Like,
an old racist white dude. Like, well, obviously.
He puts unnecessary pressure on that team. And you see it every time. Outside the fact that the Dallas Cowboys and all eyes are always on them, their owner just always, always, always puts him in a shitty situation.
It's like
runs his mouth.
Yeah.
Give me Steve Tisch who forgets the Giants exist.
Yeah, until something fucking happens and he's putting out statements. Like, I still truly believe, like, I don't think, like, it's a conspiracy, but I genuinely believe that he thought the season was over. And, like, that's why he put out the statement.
He won the Super Bowl in Minnesota?
Yeah. Or like he thought that was like the week 17 game and like that was it. Like Giants won, they didn't make the playoffs because
they didn't get regulated. That's a soccer thing. We're not going to the English championship, right?
Yeah, it's
I'll talk about soccer, Nick. Ethan doesn't like soccer.
No, I don't, but I understand what you're talking about.
They deserve their victory lap. Come on, you gotta give it to them. Let them
No. This was the first time in how long we were blessed with ownership just shutting the fuck up for a full season and letting the guys that they hired do their job and do their job well. Why couldn't you have just kept that going? No one cares about you, Steve Tisch. Shut up.
Yeah, but come on.
Wait, taking a victory lap for making the playoffs? Give me a break. Yeah,
but to me, it wasn't a victory lap. It was like a, how do I describe it? It was like, yeah, we're here, but don't forget about why we're here. Like, it's because of me. Like, we hire these people.
Shut up.
I guess it's a victory lap. Yeah.
Shut up.
F.
It was all right. Come on.
No one wants to hear from you, Steve.
And John Mayer. John Mayer, you're a nice victory.
Oh my God. Them doing the fucking round of applause.
Oh, like that.
I hated that. Oh my God. Time and a place.
Dayball didn't acknowledge them.
No, of course not.
Yeah. Dayball looked so miserable at that press conference sitting at that.
God, podium. That's like that is talk about like
on the sideline,
out of touch and corny. Yeah. That was the embodiment of that.
On the sideline, it was 28-0. I should have recorded this because it went on for a while. But you saw Dayball like head red, like just pissed. Like he truly felt like he did something that was like, and it wasn't even like it was after a bad call or something, right? Like he was talking to himself and he realized like he fucked up. Like maybe he believed they really could have won this game.
I don't think that they really could have won.
Well, you did, but I'm saying I don't think they were going to win this game. I don't think they no game plan they could put together that was going to win this game. But you just saw a Dayball that was angry. And if you're a Giant fan, I think the one thing that gives you hope is that they got two guys that got a competitive fire.
Absolutely.
These two dudes, we haven't seen Shane much because he's in the booth, in the suite, but Dayball got that fire, man. And that should make Giant fans very excited about the future of this team.
Agreed. All right. Let's wrap it up. Follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow Nick Zeraris. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe. Rate us 5 stars. Leave us a kind review. We'll talk to you guys probably next week. We'll do another episode. Why not?
Sure. You want to still take your victory laps over the Bengals?
Well, if they lose, then we don't have to record.